You're listening to RVA Real Estate Talk with Chris Elliott and Jared Davis, your source for an honest, insightful look into Central Virginia's real estate market. And now, your hosts, Chris Elliott and Jared Davis.
I'm Chris Elliott.
And I'm Jared Davis.
And this is the RVA Real Estate Talk podcast. I don't know about you. I don't think I've been introduced in a while. It's kind of nice.
It is nice. This is different. This is a different feel for us, isn't it?
This is very different.
Tell us about the show. What's the show about?
Yeah, sure. So what we wanted to do, outside of just being able to humiliate ourselves and each other on social media and the intranets, the intrawebs, we really wanted to get together. I mean, as two active real estate agents in the market every single day in the Central Virginia area, Richmond Metro, whatever you want to call it, we wanted to bring to our friends, family, and our client bases some honest kind of insight as far as what is actually happening in our market. You know, we were talking before the show started. I mean, a lot of what most people see is coming from national pundits, from, you know, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, wherever you're getting it. But most of the times it's national statistics. It's not exactly relevant to the folks that we deal with on a daily basis. So we just wanted to educate folks. We wanted to hopefully bring in some cool guests. But we also wanted to get relevant market information insight to those folks. Well, kind of what's your goal with this show, Jared?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, most of the markets we get news on these days, we see, you know, New York, we see Los Angeles, everything going out west in California. And in all honesty, Richmond's a totally different market than that. So it's hard to clump everything in as a national statistic when our values range are differently, when everything that's going on here can be different than what's going on out there or somewhere else or even out of the country, right? So we figured for the people that are here locally, whether they're looking to buy a house, sell a house, whether they're investors, whether they're looking for multifamilies, apartments, whatever it is, that hopefully we can bring a nice source of knowledge to people here in the area on what's going on so they can be better equipped.
Yeah, obviously, and just general homeowners too.
I mean, that's right.
You know, I think it's something like 95% of the population is not looking to buy or sell at any given time. So anyway, what do you think of our set, buddy?
You know, this is nice.
Yeah.
For anybody watching on video, they'll be able to see it, I guess. But this is good.
All right. So let's jump into it. So let's talk about one of the things that we want to do every week or every show, we don't know the frequency yet, is kind of educate you guys on what is actually going in the marketplace. So kind of, you know, what we're going to do is the stats that we have are always going to be 1 month behind, just because it's hard to get the information, you know, real time or within the last couple of weeks. So today we're looking at July of 2018, and we're going to compare that to June of 2018, but also July of last year, kind of see what's trending in the market and then, you know, where we've come in the last year. So, Jared, why don't you kick us off, buddy, and talk about some of the stats we're looking at today?
Yeah, if we start looking at this, you know, listings have dropped a little bit from last year. If we look from June to July, we see 1,578 to 1,447. If we look at our pending listings from June to July, we went from 1,449 to 1,272. And then if we looked for our listings dropped, we see it went from 1,760 to 1,611.
I was looking at that too. It's interesting. I mean, when you're looking at an average sales price over a month, I mean, it's really not the most accurate data, or it's accurate, but it's not as relevant, just because you're looking that, I mean, that's just 30 days worth of sales. But what was interesting about that stat, I thought, was literally the average sales price didn't change. I mean, it was 306 and some change last year in July, but it was also 306, this year and some change, but last month it was like 305 and then it went to like 315. So prices have definitely popped up. I just thought it was an interesting stat that it didn't really change from July of last year. But yeah, no, I mean, and kind of the other stats are telling the same story. You know, average list price to sales price was down a little bit from June to July. Average days on market clicked up from 24 days to 26 days. And month supply of inventory was up slightly from June to July. Tell me what you're thinking, but I mean, this is pretty much everything. This is what we see every single year in our marketplace. I mean, we're very much a seasonal market. Not to say the market dies off in the fall and the winter, but we're kind of a school-centric market in most of the pockets of Richmond. And we typically just see the market taper down a little bit, you know, in the fall and the winter months. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I think the kids get out of school, everybody goes on vacation, 4th of July comes in there. You just get people that are traveling. They get in the mindset to sell their houses in the spring if they're going to sell. And then when that market pops off and you get towards summer, people get busy. And it does. We normally do get a little bit of a slowdown in this time. You know, we'll get it pop back up for Most likely September, October, we'll see another rush. But, you know, the main thing is that houses are still selling, and they're still selling quickly, and values are still there. A lot of times it's just making sure clients are aware that it's not the end of the world if your house hasn't sold in the first 24 hours. You know, I think that's what a lot of people got accustomed to over the last year or two. If your house wasn't sold in 24 hours, something was wrong. And this time of year, it's not necessarily like that, especially depending on the price point. You know, right now what we're seeing, anything under 200,000 seems to pop off very, very quickly.
Sound like hotcakes.
Yeah, and anything in the city, for the most part, depending on where it's at, the city's a hot commodity right this second, but a lot of the bigger homes, the bigger developments, the higher price points, they're sitting a little bit longer right this second. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think especially in the higher price points, I mean, a lot of those folks, and I mean, you think about it, typically your higher price point, it's your families that, you know, the couple's a little bit older, the kids are a little older. And the reason for the move a lot of times is they want to get folks in that schools, you know, the school district that they're trying to get in, or they're trying to coordinate the move around the school schedule. And I think, you know, I would say maybe 400 plus in our marketplace is generally the higher end. And you know, a lot of that you see, you know, folks, if they haven't been able to find that home, you know, by say first week of September, a lot of times they'll pack it in until the next year, just because they're like, hey, kids are in school, we're kind of focused on that. But yeah, I would say more in the $200,000 to $300,000 price point, and especially below, it's more that evergreen market of it's going to be steady year round. And I mean, we had a great fall last year. We had a great fall in 2016. I think we're going to have a great fall again this year. But it, you know, just understand that the buyer pool does shrink a little bit in the fall and the winter months. And like you said, I mean, things aren't just going to be, it's not going to be the craziness we saw in February, March, May, June, July. So all that being said, I mean, Jared, you know, when you're sitting down with your seller clients this time of year, somebody that's on the market or even thinking about going on the market, I mean, what all these stats mean to them?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just realistic expectations. A lot of times I talk to people that maybe they've talked to multiple agents, and sometimes as the fall months get there, the winter months get there, a lot of agents will tell them just wait until maybe spring to list. That's typically not our strategy. What we've seen is that if we list all the way through a lot of the slow months, as long as there's realistic expectations that we may not have 15 showings the first day, that it may take a little bit over a week or two to sell. I think our average days on market's about 26 or 27. So if they can, okay, if we're waiting for a month or two and okay with even relisting in the spring, should they not sell, most of the time it ends up pretty good. I think if we list for every probably 10 houses we list in the winter, probably 9 of them go under contract and maybe one relists in the spring. So if you are a seller, if you haven't sold yet, still a good idea to start getting that analysis done, figuring out what you can make for it. And we don't know what the market's going to do, you know, in the next year or two. So right now we know the market's still good. Stuff is moving. And I encourage anybody, if they're ready to sell, to talk to somebody about what they can do with that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what I tell my folks is, hey, we're in September, so if we're waiting for next year, quote unquote, you're waiting. It's going to be 6 months. I mean, you're pretty much waiting till March. So it's kind of go on with the correct expectations. Hey, we're not going to slash our price. We're not going to, you know, it doesn't have to be a fire sale. If we don't get what we want to get, we could still hit the market and we just decide, hey, we're going to pack it up for a few months, or we're not going to, you know, drop our price unrealistically just to get a contract, unless you have to. But I agree with you on that. And then for the buyers, I mean, you know, I don't work with as many buyers as you do, but usually what I tell folks this time of year is like, hey, if you've been missing out on houses, if you've gotten outbid 16 times, which is kind of the story, definitely you're a little fatigued, you're a little frustrated, but just realize, hey, you're not going to be competing with as many people in the fall and the winter months that you are now. Yes, you're going to still have to act quickly. Yes, you might have to compete for a property, but it's not like you're competing against as many people, because like we've talked about, I mean, some buyers do drop out in the fall and the winter months just because, you know, kids are back in school or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and at the end of the day, if you're looking for a house in the winter, most of the time, you're pretty serious about it. If you're willing to go through Thanksgiving, go through Christmas time, go through tax season, and still keep looking, most of the time, those guys are serious buyers, which is good for sellers. And again, you're right, with the competition not being as fierce, I mean, I have people that have written 4, 5, 6 offers on houses during the summer months before they actually won a bid. And that's bidding up over ask. That's getting into bidding war. So at the end of the day, it can be a good time to find something out there without all of the raging buyers running around.
That's always fun when you're making your fifth offer on your fifth property.
There's nothing better than working than reworking. That's what I always say.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. So for today's deep dive, and what this segment is going to be throughout the show, Jaron and I are either going to deep dive on a topic where we want to kind of, you know, go a little bit below the surface on, you know, some insight or some knowledge, something that we think is relevant to you guys, or hopefully we're going to bring in some guests. We're going to do some interviews. But anyway, today, I thought it'd be pretty fun. I'm actually just in a kitchen renovation myself. And I know you're flipping a couple houses. So, you know, one of the things that comes up a lot of times is, hey, what should I do to get my house ready for market? What return, what projects, what renovations can we do to get the best return on our money? I found an interesting article, I'll say, on realtor.com. This was a good one. So what they did, and we'll link this up somewhere, they did a breakdown of what improvements you can make, what they should cost, and then what that should bring you value at sale. So Jared, do you want to go down the list and share some of your favorites? I know I've got mine.
Yeah, you know, this thing is an interesting survey. You know, I think I actually remember taking the survey as a realtor on this particular survey. And I remember, I think you had to choose a specific price range for each item. And I remember thinking these prices seem way off when I ran this survey. And now that I'm actually looking at it, the actual data that's come out, that's all I'm thinking is I can't imagine anyone is spending this much money for a lot of this stuff, let alone getting that much money back. You know, I see a major kitchen remodel and let's go major in the upscale. In the upscale market, it's saying that that job cost should be $125,000.
Yeah, I think you should. I think if you're building the rest of the house with that renovation, my favorite, the top of the list as far as job cost to value at sale was a garage door replacement. I don't know about you. Every time I sit down with one of my seller clients, I'm always recommending we replace the garage door just because that is the first thing that you notice.
It is.
As a buyer.
You know, I agree with that. I don't know if I agree with the value.
I'm being facetious.
I don't know if I agree with any of the value add. I agree that it's good if it's jacked up. But again, $3,500 to replace, $3,500 value add to sale. Yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. You know, looking at even a minor kitchen remodel, they're saying $21,000 to remodel a minor kitchen.
I thought the best one actually was the bathroom remodel for $61,000. I think if you're a Saudi prince and you're doing like a gold tub, then that could get up in that range.
Maybe
like $50,000, but
maybe
$61,662. That's a pretty serious bathroom.
Yeah, you know, even if you
but it's only going to get you $34,000 at sale. And I don't know about you, but anytime I'm sitting down with a client, they usually tack on $34,000 and $633 onto the price because they say, you know what, we love that bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I think it's pretty impressive. You got a master suite addition of $250,000. So again, I don't know what they're building on in Richmond for $250,000. That's a whole new house. The average house in Richmond is a little over $200,000. So
I think it's like $250,000.
Yeah, so that's essentially what they're doing. They're doubling it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about these stats?
So, you know, Jaron and I are sitting here kind of poking fun at this, but this is part of the reason that we want to do the show. We talked about in the intro. I mean, a lot of this information that you see on Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com, you know, whatever the website is, God bless them. I mean, it's a good place for people to start. But a lot of this information is national information, or it's, hey, this is what we're seeing in Southern California. And that's great, but it's not necessarily relevant to you. So I think when you're talking about renovations, it's really, I think the first question you have to ask is, hey, am I doing this to do an immediate resale? And in my mind, immediate resale is, hey, are we doing these improvements to sell the property in the next 6 months? Or are we just trying to be smart homeowners and say, hey, you know, we want to do X, Y, and Z, but we just want to make sure that we're going to recoup that investment or make money on that investment when we go to resell. So I think that's the first thing that you really have to talk about. So let's just take the route, Jared, if we can, of immediate resale. You know, when you're sitting down with clients, kind of what is your process as far as evaluating whether or not a client should spend money, put money into a property?
You know, I think ultimately it depends on what the client's looking to get out of a house, the current condition of the home. You know, a lot of people, most people want top dollar when you go and you sit with them.
I don't.
No. Okay.
No, I do.
Well, you know, well, most people do these days. I feel like my clients, at least. Sure. And I think at the end
of
the day,
you want top dollar, call Jared.
That's right. That's right. So most people want top dollar nowadays. And what I find is if the house is to a point where we can do minor adjustments and get it to the point where it's at top dollar or it's close, then that's what I would recommend. But sometimes what happens is you go in, say a house that was built in 1950, 1960, and a lot of it's still original. You know, you may have an original kitchen. I've seen original appliances. Maybe you have the original baths, your nice Pepto-Bismol pinks and your canary yellows, maybe some original hardwoods.
I'm a fan of the lilac tile.
The lilac? Okay. Yeah. Everybody's, whatever floats your boat, I guess you could probably still get that today.
And keeps you rocking. This is getting weird, folks.
So what happens is, as we look at this list, obviously these prices are outrageous. They're way out of line. But it would cost most home buyers, or most home sellers rather, a hefty penny to come in and remodel their entire kitchen, their bath, their floors, to try to get top dollar. So if there's some smaller things we can do, a lot of times what I notice is if their cabinets are good, maybe they just need a granite upgrade. Maybe they need some stainless appliances. If the hardwoods are worn, maybe we just need to do some refinishing. Paint, obviously, is always a good add. And then there's some things on here like the roof. You know, the roof does not really add a lot of value to a house at the end of the day.
No.
But if it's leaking, it needs to be done, right? So they need to get it to the point where at least it's sellable and it's not going to scare buyers away. So, you know, they've got on here, they think an average roof costs $20,000. I just put one on one of our flips for $2,500. So, again, the stats are a little wild on what they think things cost. But
and as long as you don't care about a little bit of rain every now and again in the master bedroom.
Buckets are cheap, I think. Pretty sure.
They're very cheap. Can we have those addresses just if folks want to see the quality craftsmanship that Jared Davis is putting in? No, but let's you hit on a lot there, and let's unpack it real quick. So I think, you know, honestly, and I know you know this, but I think you just skipped it over. And anything I could do to really insult you and put you down to elevate myself on this podcast is going to be a good thing for me.
You're going to need that.
Yeah, no, I definitely do. Because outside of looks and charm, I don't know that I have much on you, buddy. I think the first thing you always have to do that I sit down with my clients is, okay, let's actually look at the comps and let's see what the neighborhood supports. Because, you know, if you're talking a $200,000 1960s built brick rancher in a neighborhood, you know, the expectations are going to be a little bit different than, hey, you've got a $500,000 house in Wyndham, or, you know, name your high-end neighborhood. So I think the first thing you really got to do is sit down in the comps. Let's see, okay, let's look at the properties that are actually getting top dollar, and let's look at what those properties actually have. And then we look at our property ourselves, and we take a step back and we say, okay, what things can we really do to move the needle? I don't know about you, buddy, but I had two listings recently. It was kind of interesting. They were on the same street, same square footage. It was more or less the same house, but literally both properties, I walked in there and they were very dated properties. Older people had lived there, hadn't really done much renovation over the years. And I literally told both owners, I said, there's nothing that you can really do short of a major overhaul that's going to really move the needle. So honestly, let's get this place clean, and then let's not put any money into it, because you're not going to get that money back necessarily. And even if you do, it's going to be a one-for-one return. And in that case, you're better off keeping that money in your pocket. But let's do a deep dive real quick. So actually, let's get into, you know, you mentioned those minor improvements. I mean, what are those things that you see overall? Like, take us up the pegs of the ladder. Kind of what are the first things that you typically recommend, and then let's kind of go up from there.
For sure. You know, if the home's got carpet is cheap, depending on the condition it's in. If you've had kids, if you've had animals, if you've had whatever you've had over the years, if it's even worn, typically after five or 6 years.
Dead people.
However, whatever's there that needs to be covered up. Yeah, blood stains, wine, anything like that. You know, carpet's cheap, $1.50 a square foot typically laid. So it's one of those things, it's a peace of mind. You may be able to sell it with bad carpet, but when people walk in, it's one of the first things they notice.
Yep.
They don't want to budget it. So it's nice to have it fresh. Thinking about something like flooring on the first floor, laminate has come such a long way, depending on what people have. Sometimes I recommend, if it's an older laminate, to pull it up. Maybe we lay some new stuff down. Again, about $1.50 a square foot you can buy it for, $1.50 you can lay it. So for the price, it's a nice upgrade. Even in a lot of the flip and renovations we do, we use a lot of laminate nowadays because it's come so far. A lot of it has lifetime scratch warranties on it, lifetime water warranties on it now. It's good stuff. It'll actually hold up better than wood floors in some instances.
Jared owns stock in Pergo. So
that's right.
You have to disclose that right. on the podcast. No, so I agree with you wholeheartedly. Flooring is probably that base level thing that you're going to get the highest return on. Quick pro tip on the carpet. And I know you do the same thing. Builder grade carpet and then a kind of like a nice upgraded pad, because that upgrade in the pad is going to be a whole lot cheaper than, you know, going with a $3-4 square foot carpet.
Yeah.
Neutral colors. But then would you say paint's probably the next thing?
Paint's killer. You know, it's one of those things. It may not be a value add for you, but if you've got Canary, if your house looks like Margaritaville when you walk through it, you're going to want to make some changes there.
It is 5 o'clock somewhere.
That's true. What colors? What colors do you recommend nowadays?
You got me thinking about margaritas now, buddy.
Well, that's...
No, I mean, I think, you know, the classic two are beige. Just kind of, you know, vanilla tan and then agreeable gray.
Yeah.
The grays seem to be more popular, but, you know, take a look at what you've got going on in the rest of the house. You know, a lot of homes in Richmond are just very colonial, and I think the gray typically goes better. But, you know, one of the things, tell me if you've ever heard this. Well, I don't want to paint the house because whoever's going to come in is going to want to repaint it.
I have heard that, yeah. Or let them do what they want to do when they move in. What if they don't like what I did?
Yeah, I mean, typically what I see is, in like I said, I mean, this is coming from the perspective of agents that work with buyers, and,
yep.
and we hear what comes out of their mouth and the reactions they have. I mean, typically if you go in a house and the paint is rough, I mean, people literally make this, tell me if you agree with this, people usually make a decision on a house within the first like 5 to 10 seconds of I mean, literally like they walk in the door and usually it's either, hey, I'm excited, let's see more, or it's, yeah, it's
probably not going to work. I walk out of a lot of houses from the foyer, where we get to the foyer and it's an instant no.
Just nix it. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Pictures go a long way nowadays. You know, we'll have the photographer on to talk about, you know, why that's so important at some point in our show.
As a paid advertiser, we might have Mike on.
That's right. We may bring him in
Studio
here.
77 for all your photography and videography needs.
That's it. That's right. He can help us out here. So anyways, yeah, the photos,
he's gonna cut that and like loop it into the
about
the
20
podcast,
times,
like four times
at least. Yeah. So yeah, the photos are big nowadays. They can make things look much bigger than they seem. They can make things look lighter than they seem. And so yeah, people walk in, it needs to show well. It may take pictures well, but it needs to show well when the people walk in.
Yeah, and I think honestly too, if a property doesn't show well, and paint carpet is usually like the cheapest things to do. And it, like we talked about, it brings the biggest return. But I think people start getting turned off because when they see one thing wrong, it's kind of that domino effect of like, okay, what else is wrong with this house?
Yeah.
Like they start looking for reasons not to buy the house. It becomes a negative focal point of like, what else is screwed up about this house? So yeah, I think paint carpet is going to bring your biggest return. And then, you know, tell me if you agree. I think where you go from there, and we'll circle back to repairs, but I think the next things are bathrooms and kitchens, probably kitchens first.
Huge.
Would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think kitchens for sure. It's a bigger expense, but you know, typically if you've got a budget of honestly up to about $10,000, you can do a lot with a kitchen.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, what are you typically doing? I mean, I don't know about you. I don't find most clients are, you know, gutting a kitchen, doing new cabinets. I mean, usually like what is your typical kitchen remodel, quote unquote?
You know, if the cabinets are good, you can salvage them. You can typically refinish them and they look fantastic at the end of the day. Most people want a white kitchen. That's kind of what's in. So a lot of times, at least on our flips, if we can save the cabinets, if they're in good shape, even if we have to have a carpenter come in and do some work on them, we'll refinish. Obviously that cuts your budget back a lot. Instead of spending $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 on cabinets, you're spending maybe $600 to $1,500 on paint.
Yeah.
After that, granite for sure. You know, granite's key, I think. It's just so cheap nowadays. You know, at the end of the day, I think people think about it as something that's very expensive, very high end. You have so many different types of stone nowadays, from a base granite all the way up to, you know, your higher levels, and then you start moving into your quartz and your marbles and everything else.
Yeah.
So I think people realize if we're just trying to get it sold and we can just put a nice base level granite in, you'd find most of the time $1,500 to $1,700, and you can do an entire kitchen for granite.
Yeah, it's not expensive. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, usually it's like, hey, let's paint the cabinets white. Let's change out the hinges and the knobs. I mean, that's, you know, what, $100. I just did my kitchen for $100 for the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. And then it's doing a stone, a granite, and you don't have to go like the level five. We pulled it out of the cave in Italy. I mean, this is literally like your grade A granite. And that's, I mean, if you back it up and really think about who is your buyer, I mean, you figure for anywhere up to a, let's say, $250 price point, for the most part, it's a first-time home buyer, and if you could just give them a house with granite, I mean, they're usually pretty happy.
Yeah, the base granite is very nice granite. There's nothing wrong with it in any way. And a lot of times, again, as people start pricing stuff out, they'll find a vast array of different pricing with contractors.
Yeah,
you know, someone that may do a base granite for $1,500, another contractor may charge $4,000 for it because there's so many people in the line. So a lot of that's being savvy about who you hire, who you get your quotes from, obviously. But yeah, the cabinets, if you do have to replace them, again, you're probably budgeting $4,000 to $10,000 on cabinets, depending on how big your kitchen is. And then appliances. You know, sometimes we walk in and you've got somebody with a beige
mismatched.
Yeah, no one wants to see mismatched appliances. I would rather them all be white than to have a white one, a stainless, a black one.
But no, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, literally, those are kind of things. But once again, I mean, before you go do all that, consult a knowledgeable real estate professional if your goal is resale. And also look at, okay, what are the comps? I mean, like, hey, is that, if I spend 10 grand, is it going to get me 15? Is it going to get me 20?
Mm-hmm.
And do that. So, all right. So next let's talk about, so we've done the kitchen or we've talked about paint carpet. Yeah. Baths. I mean, what are you doing in the baths?
You know, baths are super easy. If I look at comps, I notice that none of the bathrooms there are remodeled and that it's not making a huge effect on sale. A lot of times we can push it through and it's okay. If it's not so out of date, it may be that it's maybe not top of the line. Maybe it's still vinyl. Maybe it's a, you know, a faux marble, but at the end of the day, if most of the comps are that range, then we don't have to spend but so much there. But I will say that even if you do go ahead and you redo a master bath, you know, you can do tile work for the floors, a new vanity and shower,
depending on,
yeah, new mirror, depending on if you have a tub. If you're just doing the shower, obviously it makes things cheaper. If you have to do a tub and a shower, price goes up a little more, but again, you're talking $3,000 to $5,000, and you can have a nice tiled out shower, tile floors, nice double vanity, mirrors. So again, from a relative standpoint, if somebody had a house that needed a kitchen bath remodel and some flooring, $15,000 to $20,000, they could knock most of that out. You know, we come into houses that look very rough when we purchase them, and most of the time for, you know, $20,000 to $30,000, we can turn around and a complete overhaul
the whole house.
Yeah, the entire house. And most of the time that's knocking out walls, that's drywall work, that's new roofs, windows, whatever it may be, exterior paint, interior paint. So, you know, for 15 to 20, someone can make a house very nice in an average size range. Yeah. Obviously, probably it's probably sub 2,200 square feet, probably good to say.
I think in most houses or marketplace, if you're spending more than $7,000 on a bathroom, you're probably spending too much.
I would tend to agree with you. Yes. Yeah.
Not normally, but on the real estate front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, so, and I agree with you too. I mean, a lot of times the bathrooms, if you, once again, look at the comps, look at the local market, look at what comparable homes are actually selling for. But for the most part, what I'm seeing is if you have a nice enough kitchen, you can get by with the bathrooms not being updated because everybody's watching HGTV. Everybody's a general contractor. Everybody's got an idea of what they want their quote unquote dream bathroom to be. And I'm seeing those younger couples are like, hey, that's something that we can do, you know, over time. But I think if there's too much for that individual, that couple, whoever, then that's when they start getting into this house is dated and it's too much work and all that stuff. So, all right. So outside of kitchens and baths, I mean, let's maybe go into repairs. So, you know, what's kind of your general attitude with clients talking about resale? With repairs, with stuff like, you know, let's maybe talk about roof replacement. Let's talk about window replacement, you know, siding replacement.
You know, the biggest thing that will derail a home sale from a home inspection standpoint, I'm sure you'd agree with this, are crawl spaces and roofs and attics.
Yep.
I mean, hands down, people get so worried about whether it's fungus, mold, water in the crawl space. And while that is something that's serious and needs to be addressed, it's very common. We live in a very humid state. It's a very wet state. And at the end of the day, most houses, I would say probably 8 out of 10 house sales that I come across have some kind of fungus in the crawl space.
84%.
That's very good.
Just made that number up.
Did you?
Okay. Sounds good, though.
Well, 8 out of 10, that's close to 84. So.
Yeah, but it sounds better if you could say like 80, like
even if it's not true.
It doesn't matter.
That's true. We can tell whatever we want, I guess. Yeah. We can tell people whatever. So anyways, it's yeah, probably that's that it is. It is our show. So it's about 8 out of 10 houses I typically see mold in. And I think that's one of the things I've watched people spook and run.
Yeah.
Even if they don't spook and run, I find that most of the time what it will cost after the fact is more than before because most of the time the buyers wants extra precautions taken that may not be necessary. So now, whereas you could have maybe fixed something for $1,200, $1,300, now you're $3,000, $4,000 in, and maybe even a lost contract. So I think crawl space are crucial. Roofs, you mentioned roofs, you know, at the end of the day, if they're not leaking, if they're good, Most of the time they can get by. But again, it's a sale standard. So if the roof is 23, 24 years old and they know it's going to be 4 or 5 years and they're going to be replacing it, it's something to take into account. Even if it doesn't add the value, depending on where your house is, it may be worth doing just to get that extra value add from a sales standpoint, as far as just making it more attractive to buyers.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I always tell clients, like, taking care of stuff like crawl spaces, roofs. Now, if you have a brand new roof, I mean, give you a little bit of credit there. But I would say things like, you know, older siding. We see a lot of Masonite siding, you know, hardboard siding, whatever you want to call it in our area, which is prone to water damage. You know, but doing things like that, window upgrades, siding replacement, I mean, for the sake of resale, I don't typically recommend it unless there's an issue, but also realize too, I mean, nobody ever likes to hear this, but, you know, addressing like a crawl space concern, nobody's going to assign more value to your property, be it an appraiser or a buyer, doing those things, but it's going to save your sale and it's actually going to cause your property to sell.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I'll recommend sometimes, not always, but you know, a good idea is to get a home inspection before you list your property for sale.
Definitely.
Because like Jared was saying, I mean, a lot of times you can get this, you can get crawl space work done a whole lot cheaper, if you have, you know, your own guys doing it versus you get yourself into a contract and now the buyer is dictating, hey, we want to have X, Y, and Z company do the work because that's who we trust, blah, blah, blah. Or they're just running for the hills and they're looking for a way to get out of the contract. I mean,
you know, I see this with especially foundation work, not to say it comes up a lot, but I mean, I even had one this year.
And it's pretty cheap usually. I mean, most people get terrified of foundations, but I've found it's pretty cheap to address.
Depending on what needs to be done, completely. I mean, I had one earlier this year that I had a quote for about $2,500 to fix everything. And unfortunately, since it wasn't fixed before the contract, we actually had another company send over a quote that was, I believe, $27,000.
$1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was not a happy time for the clients. It was not a happy time for anybody in the transaction. Thankfully, it worked out. But again, it's one of those things, if it can get checked out beforehand, it's definitely better.
Amen. Amen. All right. So we talked about those things. So that's kind of what we're looking at as far as getting a property ready for an immediate sale. I mean, is there anything else you would add to that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, we touched on flooring. If you have hardwoods, refinish is cheap, $2 a square foot in most cases from a quote. So it's worth it. If you had dogs, if they tore up your floors, it's worth, you know, having them refinished. Staging. But again, that's something that we'll probably go to on a later show in more detail.
On a later show.
That's right. Yeah, we'll get into that. No, that's about it, I think.
Cool. So, so Jared, if I own a home and I'm trying to be savvy and I want to upgrade my home and I just want to, I'm not necessarily reselling tomorrow, but I want to just get that money back or I want to be smart about it. So I call up my local realtor. I call Chris first, of course. He's busy cause he's doing a lot of business. So he calls Jared.
That never happens.
Yeah, he always picks up his phone because he's not busy. So. No, I'm kidding. So what? I mean, what would you recommend to that person? You know, where are you telling your clients to put their money as far as their house goes?
You know, again, just to retouch the points, I think it's just decluttering because it's free. Cleaning it up, overall interior, exterior, want good curb appeal, colors, good lighting. And then outside of that, it's case by case. It depends on what condition the home's in, depends on the neighborhood. But again, from what we've talked about value-wise, flooring, paint first, rolling into kitchens and baths after that, staging. And again, we go into that in later shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm telling folks, hey, you're going to always see your biggest return in my experience. Obviously, you want to take care of immediate repairs. If you have wood rot, if you have, you know, a roof that's falling apart or you got fogged up windows or stuff like that, take care of that stuff first. But once you take care of those things, I mean, your bathrooms and your kitchen first is where you're going to see your best return. Then the bathrooms. And then, you know, as far as paint and carpet and stuff, you know, paint your house whatever color you want. But just realize if you want to paint your bedrooms neon green, we're probably going to have to repaint those before we go to sell.
Right.
You're probably going to have to touch the paint anyway. So just live your life in your house. And then let's do what we need to do, paint, carpet, staging, and all that stuff. Before you relist.
That's it. Well, yeah. So I think that wraps up pretty much most of the segment here. So now it's just a matter of we'd like to hear what you guys would like us to talk about. You know, we've got some ideas. We've run across each other.
They're probably bad ideas.
They may be. So we need you to tell us that. You know, what do you want to hear about? Do you want to hear about the sales process? How does it all work? Do you want to hear from photographers, stagers, lenders? You reach out to us, rvarealestatetalk@gmail.com. Again, that is rvarealestatetalk@gmail.com. Tell us you love the show. Tell us you hated the show. Give us your honest feedback. Hopefully we'll make it better in time. And we appreciate you listening in.
Absolutely. And if you're seeing this on social, please leave us comments. Please leave us ideas, reviews. You can send all the hate mail to Jared. But tell us what you think. We want to know what topics that you want us to bring up. And I think we're out.
We're out.
If you have a real estate question you would like to ask Chris or Jared, reach out to them at chris@chriselliottrealestate.com or jared@centralvarealty.com. Who knows? It may even be featured on an upcoming episode.